You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Are we still allowed to talk about Even Year now, or do we have to find something else to troll people with?
I wasn't trolling people with. I believe in Even Year Magic.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I still have a lot of faith in this team. I have a lot of faith in the organization, and I believe the Giants will win more World Series.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Because, as you mentioned to me before we started recording, they've brought back Michael Morse.
I mean, what could be a better omen than bringing back Michael Morse?
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Darius Austin. Darius, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm looking forward to talking about a team that is perhaps a little bit more interesting than yesterday's option.
Yeah, yesterday we were so lucky to talk about the San Diego Padres, and today we get to talk about both of our favorite teams. Which is the San Francisco Giants, that ended their even year streak of World Series last year. So,
are we still allowed to talk about even year now, or do we have to find something else to troll people with?
Well, I mean, I wasn't trolling people with. I believe in even year magic.
Yeah, obviously, we all believed in it. Just wondering if it's broken now or just taking a year off.
You know, I mean, I think. I don't know. Like, part of me wants to say, like, maybe they're starting an odd year magic streak this year, and part of me, you know, says that, you know, one miss in the even years doesn't necessarily mean their dynasty on even years is over. So I don't know. I still have a lot of faith in this team. I have a lot of faith in the organization, and I believe the Giants will win more World Series because, as you mentioned to me before we started recording, they've brought back Michael Morse.
I mean, what could be a better omen than bringing back Michael Morse?
Yeah, and we have some amazing plans for how they're going to use him. We're talking about a home-away platoon where he's replaced defensively after the first inning. So just get him one at-bat in away games in the first inning and then replace him defensively.
Yeah, I think it's a foolproof plan. He can just get in the game. We'll bat him lead off. He can hit a home run, and then we'll bench him for somebody who can play outfield.
All right. Brian Sabian needs to give us a call so we can help him implement this plan. Let's jump right in, though, into their team. Talk about the infield. Start with the man, Buster Posey. What are your thoughts on Posey this year? I mean, coming off a down season last year, are you willing to take him where he's going in drafts right now?
I think usually not because of any reflection on Posey's ability, but just because I would much rather wait until the 20th round to grab a catcher, because I just think that there's, you know, a lot more value in doing that and taking somebody else where Posey is going. I think he's very dependable at a position where there are hardly any dependable options, so I don't think you can necessarily go too wrong. Even in a down year like last year, he still gave you a pretty safe baseline of production. It wasn't like he completely fell off the table. But I do think that for me, it's not the kind of play that I like to make early in a draft.
I think in two catcher formats, he's a guy that I I'm willing to take it. And I like the discount he's getting this year in two catcher formats, going about 10 picks later than he did last year at this time. In two catcher formats in NFBC leagues, he's still the first catcher off the board, but 34th overall in terms of pick. I believe he was about 25 to 30 last year, so you're getting a little bit of a discount in terms of overall picks. I love Buster Posey. I'm not usually the kind of guy in one catcher leagues that takes a catcher super early. Typically, I kind of grab from the middle of the pack. I don't wait for the bottom barrel, but I definitely don't usually use a pick very early. But he's been going at such a discount in the drafts that I've been in. I've ended up in mock drafts this year so far with a couple shares so far of Buster Posey, one in a Dynasty mock draft that I'm currently in, and then in our Friends Fantasy Benefits mock that is wrapping up here as we speak. I took Buster Posey because he was still on the board. I believe like in the fifth round. So I'd have to.
Yeah, I was starting to think about it at that point, too. That's certainly lower than I expect him to fall in most drafts. But if he is on the board there, then I would certainly think about taking him, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's definitely a guy that isn't necessarily on my target list for drafts this year, though I do think he rebounds. I think he was kind of dodged by some kind of reoccurring health issues. How do you feel about, we talked earlier this offseason on one of the podcasts about the World Baseball Classic and how we feel about certain guys playing in them. Buster Posey is one of those guys playing in the World Baseball Classic. Are you afraid of guys playing in the WBC? Posey and I believe Bumgarner's pitching and Crawford is a shortstop.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, just in the sense that it is more games in which to get hurt. I think it was Robinson Cano who broke a bone maybe a few years back playing one of these off-season tournaments. And I worry about Posey generally because I think he just carries on playing when he's hurt as well. So you're not necessarily going to know straight away. And he may end up in a prolonged slump that we'll later find out was related to some kind of injury. So, yeah, it's not ideal. I would prefer that they didn't. But it's not something that I'm going to factor in too much to my draft consideration, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think it's something I'll consider necessarily in my draft consideration, but I would rather them not play. You know, I'd rather other people's guys go out there and play, as I made pretty clear when we talked about it earlier this offseason. So let's move on to Brandon Belt. Brandon Belt has been a guy I've been extremely critical of in terms of a fantasy option. Where are you at on Brandon Belt in terms of a first baseman in fantasy?
I think in another park, he would probably hit 20 home runs or more every year. And the fact that he doesn't is almost entirely related to the fact that he plays in the worst park in the league for home runs. He's kind of becoming sort of Joey Votto-like, really. He's a very good line drive hitter, so he's got that higher BABIP he can sustain. I think he's got a very safe floor. But I do think there is a pretty limited upside there. I don't think you're going to see a massive power breakout based on his approach. And so I kind of think he is what he is. You can sort of expect in that 15 to 20 home run range. And I think he'll have a great on-base percentage because he's really become a walk machine as well. But if you're looking for upside, I don't think Belt is the pick. I think he's the kind of guy you want if you're looking for like a safe anchor at the corner. That's going to give you some good ratios and sort of decent power. But I don't think if you're kind of swing for the fences, Belt isn't the guy you want to pick up.
Yeah, he's, like I said when I kind of introduced him as a topic, I've been very critical of Brandon Belt. I've never understood the kind of the love affair certain members of the industry has had with him over the course of the last few years. I have him ranked as my number 16th first baseman. That's right below, but pretty much right on target with where NFBC has him ranked. I don't think I'd necessarily take him quite as high as they would in the overall 169th overall. He's just not a guy that I'm going to end up with. If I end up with Brandon Belt, something has gone wrong with my draft. He's just not a guy that I find very sexy. I don't think he has the huge power potential that other people have had. He's also dealt with injury issues. In years past, though, he stayed pretty healthy for 2016, but still was only able to put up 17 home runs in the large park. I'm glad you mentioned that he has kind of really taken his walk totals up every year to a point where he's almost at 16% last year. That's really impressive and great in OBP leagues, but I still want a little bit more power from my first baseman. And last year we saw the stolen bases pretty much disappear. So it went from 9 stolen bases in 2015 to 0 last season. And the Giants as a whole didn't really steal a ton of bases either. So, yeah, not a guy that I'm super interested in outside of maybe as a corner guy in OBP formats. But, yeah, other than that, he just isn't a very enticing option. Let's talk about Joe Panik. He was another guy I was extremely down on last season. Is Panik a guy that you think maybe be going at a discount this year?
Yeah, I think he will go at a discount this year. I think he had a pretty poor year last year, had dealt with injuries as well, so I don't think there's going to be too many people looking to pick him up. He got very unlucky with his BABIP in 2016, was just 245, and I think he's kind of approach is not the kind of player who should have a low BABIP. I think he's pretty good at hitting to all fields. He's the line drive hitter, so I think he just got unlucky with a lot of those line drives finding gloves instead of falling for hits. So I think he will rebound on the batting average front, but I still think he's probably just like a middle infield option in a deeper league. And unless you're kind of in a slugging league where his doubles and triples count for something, he's not ever going to be much more than that because he doesn't have the power and he's not a huge steals guy. So I think he's a great real life player, and I think he's probably just one of those back end middle infield options in fantasy.
Yeah, he's a much better real life player than he is a fantasy player. I definitely agree with you there. He was a guy that I kind of he was part of my bold predictions last year on FanGraphs, where I predicted that he would not be a top 25. Second baseman, and he's one of the few bold predictions I actually got correct. I appreciate you, Joe Panik, for that, because I really needed that one after the rest of my bold predictions failed pretty miserably for the most part. He's just not a guy that I think I'll end up on a number of my teams. He is going extremely cheap, though. I mean, he's the 26th second baseman off the board, 323rd overall in NFBC drafts right now. And the guys behind him, going behind him, don't inspire a ton of confidence. So, I mean, unless you're like you want to wait a long, long time and take a shot on like a Joey Wendell or Alan Contra. He's going right after Ryan Schimpf. I think I'd much rather have Ryan Schimpf than Joe Panik because at least he offers some power upside. He's not a super attractive piece, but he's also he's going at a cheap rate. So if you are a Joe Panik fan, you can get him extremely cheaply as your middle infield option in deeper formats. I think I'll probably be sticking away from him. Let's move over to the other side of the diamond. Talk about Brandon Crawford. Now, Brandon Crawford was a guy that seemed to break out in 2015 in the power department, but took a step back kind of towards where he was prior to that this last year. He only hit 12 home runs after hitting 21 in 2015. Do you think that which Brandon Crawford do you buy? Do you buy the 2015 version or the 2016 version?
I think the 2016 more, just because that's more in line with what we've seen in his career. Again, I think the park has to be factored in, and if you're going to bet either way in AT&T, then you have to side more towards the area with fewer home runs, just because that's the kind of place it is to hit. So while I think Crawford's kind of a very solid option, he's been a player I think has been very good at making little adjustments throughout his career and getting incrementally better. I don't think we should expect a 20 home run hitter. I think if you expect the 12 to 15 range, and then anything else on that is gravy, really. So I think he's probably going to be a fine value for a very solid option at shortstop, and I think he's going to bat in a nice place as well, considering most shortstops will sort of bat towards the bottom of the lineup. I think he'll hit fifth behind guys like Posey and Pence, and that will give him some opportunities for a pretty good RBI total. I think he's got a chance to be amongst the top guys at shortstop there. So, yeah, I like Crawford, but I don't think we should expect him to be the 21 home run hitter again.
Yeah, I don't expect him to hit 21 home runs, but I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 15. So, does it seem weird to you in a year where home runs were up that the Giants were like the only team in baseball that didn't get a boost?
Yeah, I'm still very interested to see what happens this upcoming season with the balls, whether the spike sustains, whether it was something, you know, that maybe they were flying just a little bit further, but it wasn't far enough for AT&T. I don't know. It's very difficult to say. I know a lot of people have offered theories about the balls and changes in approach and more players lofting their swing, all kinds of things like that. So, yeah, it does seem a little bit strange that the Giants are kind of the team that were still stuck without any real big home run hitters while everybody else was going crazy. And we've got the Freddie Galvises of the world hitting 20 home runs while Crawford's got 12. But I don't really know what to make of that, and I'm certainly looking forward to find out whether it continues this year.
Yeah, I just, you know, I believe the Giants were the only team in Major League Baseball that didn't have a player hit 20 home runs out of their starting lineup.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So, I mean, you know, in a year where, like you said, Freddie Galvis is hitting home runs left and right, the Giants were the only team in baseball not to seemingly not get that same boost. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this year. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, we're recording this episode probably about a week ahead of where it's going to air. And so, you know, we have, at this point, the Giants have not, you know, signed a left fielder. We may see them go and sign someone. Currently they have Jarrett Parker and Mack Williamson scheduled to be a platoon. We'll talk about them here in a moment, but maybe they'll add a power hitter at some point, either through trade or through free agency, because there are a number of them still out there at this point. Let's move over to another kind of part of this lineup I can't really figure out, and that is Eduardo Nunez. He brought over from Minnesota last year in a trade. Was pretty much their main kind of big, at least offensive acquisition at the trade deadline last year. You know, stole 40 bases over the course of the entire season. Didn't do a lot of that with the Giants, though. Did not do a lot of his damage offensively in San Francisco. So what are your thoughts on Nunez going into 2017?
I have a lot of questions about whether he can sustain this. It was the first time we'd ever even got over 400 plate appearances the 2016 season, so I don't think we've really seen that he can consistently be an everyday player and sustain this kind of performance. I think his base running is the best part of his game, so I think as long as he can kind of stay in the lineup and maintain some semblance of his production from last year, then I do think the steals will come. But I have a few questions about where he's going to hit in terms of, is he going to get to bat lead off, or at least towards the top of the lineup, or is he going to be stuck down in that 6-7 zone, which will obviously make a big difference to his plate appearances, but also his runs and steals. And I think a lot of that also depends on Denard Span, who we'll obviously talk about in a bit, and whether he's kind of rebounds a bit or if he continues to struggle a lot against lefties, in which case I think we could see Nunez leading off against them, which he did a few times towards the end of last year. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty there, and I don't really know what people think of him. I don't think he's a name that people are going to see and jump out, but if they're sort of sorting by stolen bases when they're drafting and go, oh, Eduardo Nunez stole a lot of bases last year, I'll snap him up, then I think he could get a little bit overvalued.
Yeah, I mean, currently he's not being overvalued in terms of where he's going in drafts. In the mock drafts I've been in so far, he hasn't gone extremely high. I mean, on FBC, he's going probably higher than I'd be willing to take him. He's going 7th shortstop off the board, 117th overall. So that, to me, would put me out on where he's going. But that's not where I've seen him go in mocks.
Yeah, so, that's a lot higher than I expected, I have to say.
I mean, I took him in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits 12-team mock that, like I said earlier, we're finishing up right now. I took him in the 12th round of a 12-team draft, so about 140, which to me, I was looking for speed at that point in the draft. And he was one of the few guys with a handful of stolen base potential still kind of left on the board. But even that is probably pushing, you know, where I'm feeling comfortable of him. The nice thing is he has third base and shortstop eligibility. You know, there's a chance he could pick up outfield eligibility depending on how many games your league plays with outfield in-season eligibility. So I think he could pick up some outfield eligibility, especially if the Giants do not sign another outfielder. There was rumors here a little while ago that they were looking at a Korean third baseman, which I would assume would move Nunez to left field if they were to be able to sign someone who could play third base. So, you know, the multi-position eligibility is nice. I don't think he steals near 40 bases. I think he's probably more likely to steal 28 to 30, which is still valuable in today's game. But if you're expecting a repeat of last year, I think the power isn't quite double digits this season. And I think he probably steals at least 10 to 15 less bases than he did last year. So I think he's probably closer to 8 to 9 home runs and 30 stolen bases with like a 260 to 270 average.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me.
Let's move into the outfield. We'll start with Hunter Pence, who's coming off another down year, you know, mostly due to injury. What are your thoughts on Hunter Pence? Is he a value this year?
I think he could be. When he actually played last year, he was still kind of just as good as ever. He was basically kind of putting up his career numbers as normal, but he missed another 50 games. He's obviously not getting any younger, and I think the consistency, which was once one of the things that you really relied on from Pence, is kind of now a thing of the past. It's much more of a question whether he's going to be able to stay on the field enough to help you. I think I also worry about the speed. I know he tore his hamstring pretty badly, and that should have healed over the off-season, but you do have to wonder whether he will have slowed a bit and whether he's going to be more tentative because of that. So I'd like to see how he looks in spring training, and I hope that he is going to get back to stealing bases, because I think if he doesn't, then he's not a particularly exciting option as a guy who maybe is going to hit 20 home runs at best and, you know, give you a decent but not exciting batting average. So, yeah, he's kind of, I think he might be a value, but I also have a lot of questions about whether this might just be the downswing of his career and we're not going to see him get back to his old levels again.
Yeah, as much as I love watching Hunter Pence play because of his unorthodox approach to everything that he does, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I like where he's going in drafts. He seems to be a value in every mock draft I'm in. You know, I'll pull up his NFBC numbers, but I'm pretty sure he is going, he's going 45th as the 45th outfielder off the board, just outside of the top 200. I think that's totally fair and totally fine. Going at this, you know, right at the same spot as Michael Brantley, which is another guy that has been dealing with injury issues the last couple of years, right in front of Yasiel Puig, who was a guy who's had other issues that have kept him off of the field. So, I mean, he's kind of going in a wild card area on NFBC drafts. So I don't have a problem. I think I would prefer Puig over him, but Pence over Brantley. And I'm probably in the minority on that. Out of those three, who would you prefer?
I think I might like Pence the best, just because I think, surprisingly, I've got the least amount of uncertainty about him. I don't really know where Puig stands with the Dodgers at the moment, and Brantley's whole 2016 is really concerning to me, and I just don't know what he's going to look like when he gets back. So I think at that spot I might actually like to have Pence, but it's pretty close. It's the kind of thing where it's very situational as well. If I was really looking for the upside, then I would definitely take Brantley or Puig over Pence, because I don't think you're going to get a huge breakout season, whereas I think Brantley or Puig could obviously be top two or three round talents if they manage to get back to the best form they've shown us in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of Brantley. I just don't trust Brantley's health at this point. You know, he's going to need to show me a full season worth of at-bats before I'm willing to ever buy back in on Michael Brantley. Puig, I'm much higher on. I look at the Dodgers roster, the way it's constructed, and I go, I think they have to give him full-time at-bats this year, or at least pretty close to it. Though, I mean, last year they showed they're willing to send him down to AAA. So who knows what you'll get from Puig, but I think I would take Pence second out of that grouping. I do worry about the speed, and that's kind of my, you know, if as long as he's healthy coming into the season, I don't see much of a reason to doubt that he will, you know, play, you know, 150, 155 games this year. You know, I think the injuries, while the hamstring injury, you know, is something that is definitely very troublesome, the injury in 2015 was like a freak accident. I mean, where the ball hit him as he was diving for it, and caused a break. So, you know, I'm not necessarily worried about, you know, him turning into an injury prone player after being a consistent guy. To me, I do worry about the speed. I mean, he's stolen a total of 5 bases at the major league level the last 2 seasons. Obviously, they're both injury riddled seasons. You know, where he only played 158 games between the 2 years, after playing in 160 games at least the prior 3 seasons to those 2 years. So, if he's not stealing double digit bases, I think you're right. He's not an interesting player in fantasy. He's got to be able to steal a handful of bases to supplement the fact that he's not a huge power guy. And so I think he is a fairly safe option, or a fairly decent option where he's going. I don't think he's a huge value, but I think he could offer some sneaky value kind of in the 200 area of your draft, if he's able to steal some bases in 2017. Let's move over to the aforementioned Denard Span and talk about him. He was a guy I really liked coming over the Giants last year. Not a very impressive season. Where do you stand on Span?
I think, once again, this is somebody we're looking at the speed with. He was caught stealing 7 times in 19 attempts, but his other base running numbers look fine to me. So if he can kind of get back to stealing in the 20-plus range as he has in the past, then I think he can be a good value. If he doesn't, then he's obviously not a guy who usually gives you that much power, although he did surprisingly last season. And he also seemed to really slump against left-handed hitters, as I mentioned earlier. And if he does that and Nunez ends up taking those leadoff at-bats as well, then that will further hurt his value. So I don't think he's going to cost an awful lot. But as a 33-year-old who's seen a decline in his stolen bases, I'm a little bit worried that his major source of value is disappearing. So I'm not sure that I'm going to be owning too many shares of him this year.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be owning too many shares of him either. I do agree with you. I think the efficiency on the base pass should kind of improve. You know, he's not a guy in the past that necessarily was thrown out a ton on the base paths, but I don't think the days of him stealing 20 to 30 bases may be kind of coming to an end as he gets older. He is, you know, entering his age 33 season. He'll be 33 before the start of the year. So I do worry about that. You know, I do worry a little bit about the hit and the average. I don't know exactly where that came from. As he was a guy who hit 300 in 2015 and then dropped 40 points in 2016. Maybe it was a little bit of selling out for power. Maybe he was the reason. Maybe he was the guy that got the boost on the Giants team in terms of power. As you mentioned, he doubled his home run production from the previous year. So Span is a guy that I think if he can stay on top of the lineup, I think he offers some nice run production. I think he'll score more than 70 runs as long as the platoon issues don't become a problem and get him moved to the bottom of the order. So, I mean, I would probably say 5 to 7 home runs, 15 stolen bases, 285 average. And that isn't super enticing unless the runs scored is closer to the 90 level than it is to the 70 level. So probably not a guy that I'm going to end up with outside of deeper leagues. He is going extremely cheaply right now. So he's a guy that I think can be had for quite a discount compared to previous seasons. It's just a matter of how much you believe in a rebound for him. Let's move over to left field. Like I said, the Giants could end up signing someone that changes this whole situation before this airs. But at the moment, you have a platoon shaping up between Jarrett Parker and Mack Williamson. Who would you prefer out of these two guys? And do you think one will be able to claim a full-time role at any point?
I think Parker is the more interesting for fantasy. I think he's got a better power-speed combo. At least potentially, although the speed hasn't shown up in the majors so far. I think his contact did seem to improve last year, and his strikeout rate is not great, but it was at tolerable levels. I think he was at 29% last season after a pretty horrific sort of first showing in the majors, and he's got a good walk rate. I also think he's got a more balanced approach than Williamson. I think Williamson is a very pull-heavy hitter, and he's not an established enough player to be shifted yet, but I think as teams realise how much he pulls the ball, they are going to shift him more often, and that could really hurt his batting average as well. So I think he's not an ideal option. I think there's a lot of downside there, and I would certainly be looking at Parker of the two as the more interesting option were he to get the job full time.
Yeah, and I mean, Parker is the lefty, so he's got the stronger side of the platoon. I like Williamson as a player. I think he's a better defender than Parker, but I don't think he is an enticing fantasy option. Really, I don't like either of these guys as fantasy options. I mean, if Parker were to be able to get the full-time role, maybe he's a guy that could flirt with 15 to 20 home runs at the major league level, in spite of the fact it's a larger park. I think his power will play either way. But, I mean, he also strikes out at a 30% clip. At least he walks a fair amount, but I don't think he's necessarily a guy that is extremely talented, and he may strike out too much for the Giants in the way they tend to like to construct their team. All right, let's move into the rotation where this team becomes a lot more interesting. Madison Bumgarner, where do you have him in your starting pitching ranks?
I think I'm gonna have him at number four, so right up there. Obviously, we've got Kershaw at number one, and I think you have to go Scherzer two. I think then I'm kind of leaning towards Syndergaard at three and Bumgarner four, but it's all pretty close in there, and he's obviously been one of the most dependable starters in the league. ERA under 3 for 4 straight years, never been worse than 3.37, and although his velocity did dip a little bit last year, it didn't seem to affect his results. I also think it's impossible to overstate how good Buster Posey is for this pitching staff. He's such a great framer. I think he works so well with all the pitchers, and I think I'll touch on this later with some of the other guys, but I think he really helps in terms of game planning as well. So I just think this is perhaps one of the most reliable starters you can draft in fantasy, and he pitches in a great park as well.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much know what you're going to get with him. I have him as my number three starter currently, but I've been bouncing Chris Sale and Syndergaard around the 3, 4, 5 spots. So I don't think you can really go wrong with any one of those guys as your first pitcher off the board after Kershaw and Scherzer. So, you know, I mean, he's a stud. You know what you're going to get from him. The safety is what makes him so such a high pick. You know, I love what Syndergaard offers. I worry about the injuries and him being able to stay healthy long term with the way he pitches with such power. So, you know, that's what's keeping Bumgarner above him at the moment. But I can't really blame you if you want to go Syndergaard, if you want to go Sale at the number three spot. Cueto is a guy that is got a little bit of in years past has been people would avoid him because of the injuries. Right now, pretty much every ranker that has their ranks already finished has him as a top 10 option. Do you believe he's a top 10 option as a fantasy starter?
I might lean just outside, and not because I don't think he's a great pitcher, but just because from a fantasy perspective, his strikeouts aren't quite at the level you would expect of the absolute elite tier. He doesn't quite get to that strikeout per inning mark, but I think he's a back-end number one starter, a very good number two, and that's the only knock on him, really. I think he's shaken off those injury issues. He's had three straight years of 210 or more innings. He's got a great ground ball percentage, and he already didn't give up many home runs, and now he's in AT&T. So, yeah, I think Cueto's a really good pitcher, and I only ding him a little bit for fantasy because he doesn't have the strikeout stuff of some of those top-end guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily worried about the strikeouts. I think you supplement those later with other guys. I have him as my number ninth starting pitcher off the board. I agree with you. I feel like he's finally shaken off the injury-prone tag. He's pitched over 200 innings the last three seasons. So, I mean, at this point, if he breaks down, you know, I think he's at no more risk than any other pitcher at this point in his career. He is entering what would be considered a walk year for the Giants. If you believe in guys entering contract years, he's got an out clause, I believe, after this season. So he could walk away from the massive contract he got to try to go get another one. So if you buy into that kind of believing, I don't personally, but that is on the table. I think he's top 10 option going forward into 2017. Jeff Samardzija, where are you at on him? I mean, he had moments where he showed really, really nice skills, and then moments he showed why it's frustrating to own Jeff Samardzija. So is this a year where he can kind of bounce back and be a little bit more stable, or is he just the same old guy?
I think, yeah, there's been so much inconsistency. We've already had kind of peripherals all over the place. The one thing you've been able to rely on the last few years has been innings. He has topped 200 last four seasons, but the results have been pretty mixed. You know, we've had ERAs under 3 and ERAs up near 5. He's struck out quite a few guys and sort of dipped down below into the 17-18% range. So it's very difficult to rely on him, I think. The one thing that I'm looking at and being quite encouraged by is the fact that he started using his curveball again at the end of July, and he was a lot better in August and September. His ERA was under 3, then 2.86 the rest of the way. He struck out a batter per inning with just 20 walks in almost 70 innings. So I think if those gains are real, if he's really got the curveball, and it certainly seemed to be able to command it well, then I think we could be looking at a mid-3s or better ERA for Samardzija. And again, I think he's a guy you can rely on to be durable. So yeah, I'm kind of quite interested, more interested than I thought I would be when I started looking at him.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the second half, 3.44 ERA and a 3.32 FIP. So, you know, eight strikeouts per 9. I think he is a guy that may be a little bit underrated as an option. I think you could probably get him as your fourth or fifth starting pitcher. And if that's the case, I think he's worth the gamble. He's actually going behind Matt Moore in drafts. He's the 52nd starting pitcher off the board, 199th overall. Matt Moore is going as the 46th pitcher off the board, 184th overall. So they're in the same general vicinity, but going a little bit cheaper than Matt Moore. So I kind of like the value you're getting, actually, with both Matt Moore and Samardzija, but a little bit more so with Samardzija. What are your thoughts on Matt Moore? Do you think he is going to take a step forward in San Francisco in his first full season there?
What bothers me about Moore is the consistency. I think he's demonstrated that he's kind of got his velocity back up, not to where he was as a rookie, but certainly to the level where you got 94 coming from the left side. That's pretty useful. The control is still not quite there, I don't think. And I just watch him, and he doesn't seem to ever really have mastered his delivery fully to the point where it looks repeatable. I noticed Doug Thorburn made some comments about how his momentum isn't very good. He seems to do a lot of different things with his back leg all the time, and it just looks awkward to me, like he doesn't really know quite what his delivery is, and it seems to affect him. I noticed he sort of mixed those starts in at the end of the season. He'd go 8 innings and give up 1 earned run, and then the next start he'd go out and give up 6 earned runs in an inning, and that would be it. And I just think he might be one of these guys that is going to frustrate you all year, and he'll have great starts that you've got him on the bench for because he's blown up the previous week. And yeah, I really think there's so much potential there, but I don't know if he's ever going to tap into it. And I think even at a discount, I might just prefer to take a shot on somebody else who maybe I don't have quite so many concerns with in the delivery.
So would you rather have Samardzija or Moore?
I think I would rather have Samardzija at this point.
I think I would too. I think you get him a little bit cheaper. It's weird to say, but he seems a little bit more stable to me. I never thought I would say that about Jeff Samardzija, but, if you look at his starts throughout his time in San Francisco, he had one game where he was, he was one batter away from a no-hitter against the Dodgers in Los Angeles. And then two starts later, he's getting blown up by the Rockies. That his next start out against the Dodgers, he only goes one inning, gives up 6 earned runs. You're going to have games in which he's absolutely lights out, and games in which he gets just blown up. And like you said, it's going to be extremely frustrating. He had 2 games in San Francisco with 11 strikeouts, and 4 other ones where he struck out at least 7. The strikeout potential is there. The skills can be there, but when his mechanics get off and he starts missing inside of the zone, he becomes a powder keg to your ratios. And that's something that I'm not typically a big fan of. I've never been a big fan of Matt Moore in general. I don't think he's going at a bad price necessarily so far in drafts, but if I've got the Bumgarner, Kluber kind of guys on my team already, and I feel like I've got some safety within my rotation, then Matt Moore, I guess, is worth a gamble. I still think there are guys going around him that I would rather have. Marcus Stroman's going a few picks ahead of him. The Velasquez is going right below him. John Gray is going right below him. Eichhoff is going below him. Manaea, Desclafani, Lance McCullers. I would much rather have Lance McCullers as a guy that has huge upside, but some downside as well, than a guy like Matt Moore at that spot in the draft. So probably not going to have many shares of Matt Moore going forward. I do believe in Dave Rigetti, the Giants pitching coach, in terms of being able to work with guys on mechanics and help them through. And you did mention Buster Posey and his ability to frame and call a game. That can only be to his benefit. But it wasn't like he was lights out the entire time when he was in San Francisco with Posey and Rigetti in the second half of the season. So I don't necessarily know that a full season of that will occur. Anybody else in terms of starting pitchers that you're interested in? Matt Cain is still on the team. They've got some guys who may be coming up in AAA. They traded Ty Block, so he's gone. But they still have Clayton Blackburn and Chris Stratton roaming around the AAA ranks. Any other guys that are interesting to you at all?
I think in the sense that I think any of these guys around AAA, even the ones that aren't that highly rated, could sort of do a Chris Heston. I think the situation is good enough with the park and with Posey, and they're sort of all guys who've kind of got these maybe 4-5 starter tags on them that I think they could be, you know, cheap sort of waiver wire pickups that are worth taking a shot on just because of the situation. And then you might sort of get a bit of luck and catch a lucky season out of somewhere, and you know, you get something out of nothing. But there's nobody who's super exciting to me. I don't see a lot of strikeout upside here. I think these are more solid guys who are a back end of the rotation if they pan out, and maybe they have a useful fantasy relevant season or two, but you're not going to be looking at them long term as great options.
Yeah, and I misspoke. Ty Block stolen team. Chris Heston was the one who was traded over to Seattle. You know, I mean, I could see Block getting some spot starts. Josh Johnson, I guess, is on their AAA rotation. I guess he was signed this year, so that's an interesting kind of name from the past. You know, I mean, the guy that I would be interested in, but I don't think he comes up early enough to make a huge impact this season, would be Tyler Beede, who is probably their number one prospect. You know, I'll talk with Matt later about the prospects on this team, but Tyler Beede is kind of their number one prospect. He could also get moved at some point as a centerpiece for maybe a left fielder. You know, maybe they go after like a Jay Bruce or something like that, and Tyler Beede's part of that package. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's not even on the roster halfway through the season, or in the organization halfway through the season. But I think he's got the most of, amount of upside in terms of another starter on this team. Blackburn, Stratton used to have some prospect pedigree. Stratton came up as a reliever at points last year and looked good at the bullpen, but I don't think him or Blackburn are ever going to crack this rotation as it's shaped right now. All right, let's move into the bullpen, where the Giants had some issues last year, but have put together a pretty nice bullpen for the 2017 season by signing Mark Melancon, getting to move Strickland and Will Smith and Derek Law kind of back one spot within the bullpen. What are your thoughts on Melancon, elite closer?
Yeah, I think so. He's got a 1.80 ERA over the last 4 years. He's got exceptional control. He's walked 45 batters in that time. That's 290 innings pitched with just 45 walks. A really good ground ball percentage. I just think, yeah, he's one of the most reliable closers in the game. And he's landed in a nice situation. So he's not the Kenley Jansen or Aroldis Chapman, but I think he's about the next best thing you can get.
Yeah, I mean, the strikeouts aren't elite, you know, in terms of, like you said, like a Chapman or Jansen. But the consistency is there. I mean, I didn't love the contract from a long-term perspective, but I think this is a team that is kind of built to win right now. And if they don't in the next year or two, they're probably going to have to blow everything up anyways. So who cares about the money in 2019, 2020? You know, they're just trying to do what they can to win right now. And I think in terms of 2017 value, Melancon is at least a top seven closer, if not a top five guy. I have him as my fifth closer, with Jansen, Britton, Chapman, and Diaz going ahead of him. And for the most part, the rankers on Friends Fantasy Benefits feel the same way. As me, Matt Thompson, being the only kind of low guy on him so far as his ninth relief pitcher. He's going in that area anyways. He's going as the fourth reliever on NFBC leagues, just behind kind of the big three in Chapman, Jansen, and Britton. So I'm pretty much right in this exact same spot as Craig Kimbrell. So, what about other guys in this bullpen? Are you a Strickland guy? Are you buying him as kind of one of the elite holds guys in this league?
I think I've yet to see the kind of development that I wanted to see from Strickland. He's obviously got the extreme high heat, But he really struggled to get left-handed hitters out last year. And I think with a guy like Melanson ahead of him, he's obviously not got that likely a chance of getting any saves either. So I think those two things make him not too exciting for me. I would like to see more strikeouts given his velocity. I think maybe he needs to figure out his changeup a bit more, something that he can use against left-handed hitters better. Will Smith, I would like more if Bruce Bochy didn't seem to think that he was like a lefty specialist. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why he thinks that, because he hasn't really got a platoon split, but he certainly used him that way, especially late in the season in the playoffs. So I think he's a great pitcher, even though his walk rate is a little bit high, but his strikeouts are certainly the kind that you can use from a middle reliever. And Law, yeah, I really like what I saw from his first year. And I think he's somebody I could see picking up in a deeper league just to get some nice strikeouts and maybe sort of be that in-the-dark closer option that maybe people will think Strickland is the guy in line. And I think Bochy was actually kind of a bit keener to give it to Law last year. And with Sergio Romo gone, then I think he might be the guy who gets the first shot if anything did happen to Melanson.
I completely agree with you. I mean, and I like Connor Strickland probably a little bit more than you do, but I think Law would be the next man up in this bullpen if something were to happen to Melanson. And, you know, if Melanson were to get injured, hit the DL, I think Law is the guy that becomes the next in line for saves. I think Strickland has kind of proven to Bochy that he can't be relied upon. And if Law were to get, like, if something were to happen to Melanson where he's out for an extended period, Bochy's shown that, like, he's, like, extremely loyal to his guys. I mean, how long did we see Casilla last year just inning, or, you know, time after time get put out there and not be able to deliver, and Bochy just stuck with him for the longest time until pretty much he had no other choice but to go to some sort of a rotation in the bullpen for saves. So I think if Law were to get it in the event of a long Melanson injury, I think he could become a pretty elite closer. So if you're in, like I said in the previous podcast in San Diego's, if you're into handcuffing your closers, I think Derek Law is the guy to do that with, not Hunter Strickland. All right, that is going to wrap us up. Darius, want to tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I'm just finishing up my rankings, so they should be up on the next update on the site next week. And I'll also have some pieces going up about putting those together and some players that I found harder to rank. You can also find me over at Banished to the Pen, where we'll be getting some season previews going soon. And as I mentioned on yesterday's Padres preview, my long-awaited review of obscure baseball movie Long Gone, starring William Peterson.
I hope this becomes a running series of of reviewing obscure baseball movies.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many obscure baseball movies there are, but the more I can find, then I'll certainly make it into a series if there's material there.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Like you heard at the top of the show, if you give us a 5-star review, that will get you entered into one of our listener leagues and or eligible for prizes, giveaways that we're going to do later on in the off season. So please do that. Send a screenshot of it or a copy of it to me via email or at Fantasy Benefits on Twitter or my personal Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can read all my baseball stuff. Most of it goes on FanGraphs, Fantasy Side, which is called Rotographs. The rest of it goes on friendsfantasybenefits.com, where we also have full staff ranks, lots of articles and things going up on strategy and things you can do to improve your chances of winning in the fantasy baseball season. Hopefully you're enjoying all of the team previews we've got going on and all the kind of mini prospect podcasts on each team that we've been doing with Matt Thompson. We've been putting a lot of work in this offseason and hoping you are enjoying and getting to reap the rewards of it. So that will wrap us up. For Darius and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.